This is the sunny but cold voice of your local announcer, Tom Fitzmaurice. And it's time now for the food show. Here we are, back again, after, depending on how you look at it, 2 or 4 days off because we were running all the high school football finals. And I don't know if that's over with yet or not. I think it is, but I'm not sure. It is over. Okay. Did Jesuit win? Was Jesuit even in it? I don't know. No, they weren't. Okay. Well, here we are back again. And getting that 4 days off, because that was counting Saturday and Sunday, I had 4 consecutive days off, which almost never happens. I mean, there's always things going on, and I wind up doing what some people would call work. Maybe a lot of people wouldn't call it work at all. They're probably closer to right about that. But I get in here, and you know, we wind up talking about stuff. But here's how it worked out last week. I was not on the air on Thursday or Friday, and Thursday was my wife's birthday. What a great time for that to fall. And she picked out a couple of restaurants. We wound up doing lunch one day and dinner the other day, and both of them were kind of upscale restaurants, although not ridiculously so. And we had a nice time, and I'll tell you more about that later because it wasn't unexpected or something. Well, I'll just tell you quickly the 2 restaurants. One of them is Pardo's, which has moved into a new location in Covington. Excuse me. No, that's not right. That's where they were. They were in Covington, and they've moved into Mandeville with a much better-looking place, I think. And we had a nice time there. And the very next day, we went to Keith Young's Steakhouse, which is always good. I had, as my entree, I had 8 oysters Bienville. You know, you can fill yourself up on, or 6 orders of oysters Bienville would probably do the job. But he sells them in 4s over there for some reason. Keith Young does. And so I couldn't resist that. And it was at lunchtime, and they don't usually have the oysters at lunchtime, but they did that day. And I'm thankful for that because that's a really good recipe there, and I know why. He told me this. I didn't beat it out of him. He told me from out of nowhere. He said, "I got the recipe for this out of your cookbook, Tom." Well, that's nice. A very flattering thing. All right. On my way over today, I was thinking about what we might talk about here today. The answer to that question, and whatever else comes out of my mouth after that, you can forget about for the rest of your life, because the only thing that matters is the main rule around here, and that is we will talk about anything you want to bring up that is even remotely on the subject of eating, drinking, restaurants, cooking, travel, all of that. It's wide open to you, whatever is on your mind. If you want to start calling me on a regular basis so you can become a semi-celebrity like me, you are free to do that. You're always welcome here. And even if you think you have a stupid question or an oddball, weirdo kind of statement to make, go ahead and call. I mean, in all the years we've been doing this, we're so lucky about this. The people who call us are first-class foodies, and they love talking about it. So do I. So do you, probably. And so it doesn't matter what you talk about on our show. It doesn't matter if it's the same thing that I was talking about. All that matters is that you call us. Our number is 260-6368. And before I walk away from the number, we're still using that number, right? We haven't moved to the new number yet, I guess. We have no new numbers. Yes, we have no new numbers. No, wait, isn't that... Oh, brother, we're off to a rotten start here. 260-6368. So anyway, whatever you want, and I mean that because, you know, if you were to start a big trend here, God bless you. Make it on my show that you talk about it. And we'd love to hear from you, and we'll make a celebrity out of you if we can. Now, moving along, though, on my way over here, I'm always, believe it or not, I think of this as fortunate. I cross the causeway just about every day. And when I do, because the causeway is so monochromatic, it's just, you know, straight shot. There are no curves in it unless you count the up and down curves. There's not many of those. And so that it leaves the mind free, assuming that you are scanning the traffic and all the rest of it, too, of course. But that's kind of like a special skill we causeway crossers have pretty much studied and have all figured out. But I think of, you know, possible things. And here's what I came up with today. And let's see if anybody can follow through on this and see if we wind up with anything that makes any sense. And I can tell you in advance, it's not going to be anything particularly meaningful, although it's fun to think about. All right. Imagine this. And I'll tell you what brought this on. About a week ago, I bought a had lunch over at on well, they have several locations around town. I'm giving myself clues as to what the place was. It'll kick in a second. But anyway, DeMartino's, there it is. And they have a location, a very beautiful little restaurant, actually, in Covington. And I go there fairly often. And what I usually get there is their roast beef po' boy, which I think is one of the very best in the city, mainly because of the bread that they use. The bread, these guys are specialists in making muffalettas. But the bread that they use to make muffalettas, it makes a great po' boy, too. So it's so I was over there. The poor boy that they serve you for $10 is much too big for even a big guy like me to wolf down. So I ate about half of it, wrapped it up, put it in the refrigerator, and figured I would get to it sooner or later. And today I did, and I ate that thing, and it was just like the way I had it, except that I warmed up the oven with the convection on, and put it in there. It took about 10 minutes in the oven at 400 degrees, and the gravy came out as a gravy again. It had been kind of like stuck up together. There was a lot of pickles in it, which kind of protects everything from starting to go rotten. The roast beef there is always real tender and nice. It's great gravy, and all of that. And so I ate the other half of it today, and that's what got me started on this. If you start thinking about what is important about a roast beef po' boy? What does a roast beef po' boy have in order to really qualify as a great classic roast beef po' boy? And what came into my mind was this. Three ingredients. The bread. I think the bread is much more important than most people think for a roast beef or any other kind of po' boy. Bread, gravy, and pickles. And now, of course, there's mayonnaise and all the other things that however you like your roast beef po' boy cooked. But those three things give it that wonderful roast beef po' boy flavor. I think particularly when the mayonnaise, I'm torn over this because the mayonnaise almost belongs, but you don't use that much of it. But if you have the good gravy, you have a really nice bread that's got some guts to it that doesn't fold over. And when you take a bite of it and you try to pull it away from your mouth, it gets springy. You know what I'm talking about? There's too much of that kind of French bread out there these days. Really, the only solution to it, and there's nothing to it, you just take the whole sandwich, you shove it in the oven for a few minutes, and the crust of the bread will toast up a little bit, and you don't have that problem of, you know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. You know, you just clamp down on it. And it's like rubber almost. That's not good. But if you have the bread, the gravy, and the pickles, and you know the mayonnaise just misses the cut, you've got the roast beef flavor. And I was thinking, you know, there are probably other dishes where that fits in. And the first one that came to my mind, barbecue shrimp. I think one of the two or three best, most unusual, little-known dishes in all of Creole cooking, and in the rest of America, where they're not lucky enough to have Creole cooking, If you ever see, if you ever find yourself in, say, Denver, or in Milwaukee, or Atlanta, and you see a place that is selling barbecue shrimp, I can tell you what you're going to get. You're going to get grilled you're going to get grilled shrimp covered with barbecue sauce out of a bottle, which you know and I know is laughably, ridiculously far, far away from a real barbecue shrimp. You know what that's all about. Well, here's what it takes to make good barbecue shrimp. Shrimp, you need black pepper, you need butter. Plenty of each one of those things. Now, there are some other ingredients in there. There's a little bit of garlic, a little bit of Worcestershire sauce. Some people put beer in the sauce as they're making it. Some people I've seen use a little bit of red wine. You don't use much of either one of those things. But the critical things, you can make a good barbecue shrimp with only shrimp, black pepper, and butter. You're 99% of the way there. So I'm in the car and driving across the causeway, and I'm trying to think of other things where that fits, where that formula fits in. No pun intended. And so I thought you might have one because, after all, I know just, you know, how intelligent our listeners are and how much thought they put into things like this. That's what makes us different from normal people. And I say the word normal and meaning it. We are able to put these things together in ways that are just wonderful and in ways that people the rest of the world over that have no idea about. So, you know, it's worth going after. So I just thought I'd put that out there for you. Name a dish that you know, preferably one that you really love, and tell me which three ingredients make it what it is. You know
okay,
what I mean?
That's easy.
You've got one?
Oh, yeah.
Doug has one.
You make angel hair pasta with
angel
butter
hair pasta.
And garlic.
Butter and garlic and pasta.
That's it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you should bring that up because last night my wife and my daughter were having dinner at for some reason I have a mental block against remember. It starts with M-O, I never remember. Anyway, it's a little Italian restaurant in downtown Covington. We go there pretty often. We like it. And they have pizza there. They have a little bit of everything. I had, to tell you the truth, something unusual. It was basically a cut-up rack of lamb, which I was not expecting in that little place. But there it was, and it was very good. And we had a few other items along those ways. But one of them, my daughter asked for this. She said, I want just some pasta with some olive oil or butter and garlic, just what you just said. If you wanted to, you could combine the olive oil and the butter. That works better than you might imagine.
But that's a great kids menu. Kids love that stuff.
Kids love that. And at our house, we've always called that garlicky pasta.
There you go.
And the wonderful thing about it, I don't know how this happened, but you know, kids are pretty picky. And garlic makes a big statement in terms of flavor and aroma. Well, almost since the first time that they were given some of it, my kids just thought that one of the best things you could possibly eat is what they call garlicky pasta, also known as aglio olio, pasta bordelaise around New Orleans. That's the only place in the world where bordelaise is used for that. And there you go. There's probably a few others out there. That's a good one.
I would add a little pepper or maybe some Cajun whatever, a little hot sauce to it.
A little bit.
That's more for the adult taste where we have lost a lot of our taste anyway.
Well, I know that. You know what I think is doing it to me is that I think I'm drinking my coffee too hot. And if my wife is listening, she's probably saying some variation on hallelujah. Because it seems like every time I pick up a cup of coffee in the kitchen and go back to my office, I splash it all over the floor. And you know how much my wife must love that. And I'm so sorry. I really am. I'm not trying to make it seem like, oh, I'm in trouble again. It's The Food Show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice, and it's fun to be here with you every day talking about eating. Are you sick of Christmas carols yet? Not me. I'm still there. There's a bunch of them this year. There's on the satellite thing. There are three of them that I've been able to find that are listenable, and there are a couple more that are not listenable. 260-6368. I'm giving you just a little challenge. It's a brain teaser. Name me a dish that whose essence can be defined with just three of the ingredients. The two we've come up with, roast beef poor boy, it's the bread, it's the gravy, it's the pickles. You're saying, what about the beef? Well, the beef is kind of secondary to the gravy. If you made a roast beef poor boy with no gravy, you would not have a roast beef poor boy, you would have something else. And I don't know if anybody would like it, because roast beef poor boys are... That's what got me started about writing and thinking about food, is that you've heard this story before if you've been listening to me for any length of time, but my godfather, who was a longshoreman, he really was, he was a rough and ready guy, but a very nice guy, and loved him for a long time. He was, he's long gone. One day he was stuck with babysitting with me. I was about 10 years old or so. And he took me to Clarence and Lefty's, which was a bar. And all of his friends hung out there, and he would just shoot the breeze with them and have a few beers. And one day he was stuck with taking care of me while, he didn't want to stay at home. We went over there to Clarence and Lefty's. He said, "No, go sit in that, over at that table over there with your back to the door. We don't want anybody to see you in here. This is a bar. You're not supposed to be in here." And the lady who ran it had some misgivings about it, but she went ahead and did it anyway. She didn't think that any harm could come of it, because if she's back there slaving away in the kitchen and making roast beef poor boys, which was something that they did there really, really well, to the point where if you find any number of people who are of that generation, they will tell you that was the best one of all. It certainly was memorable to me, because I ate one of those things, and it was huge, too. And then I ate another one to my uncle's great surprise. He thought I was a scrawny little nothing. He was always giving me grief about that. He wanted me to work up my muscles like he had. As a longshoreman, you sling a lot of heavy stuff around. Anyway, I just fell in love with roast beef poor boys. And ever since then, I've been thinking about, okay, there's the food that tastes really good and really wonderful. And then there's the food that is not so good and not wonderful at all. And you have a choice. You can have either one. You really can, even if you introduce the cost aspect of it. You don't have to spend a lot of money to eat really, really well in this city. You really don't. That's been a theme of mine as I write guidebooks and stuff for as long as I go back to the beginning there. Anyway, this was one thing that came to my mind. So the idea is, once again, think of a classic dish that everybody loves. I gave you two of them, roast beef poor boys and barbecue shrimp. And can you define that there are three ingredients in each of these that makes up the essence of the sandwich? If you didn't have those three ingredients, you wouldn't have the sandwich at all. You'd have something else. 260-6368.
Now, I can tell you about
a
roast beef poor boy story.
Yeah.
That's a bit more up to date than...
Oh, well.
Okay. You know. But a while back, when Bruce Springsteen first had his first hit, he came to town. He was going to play the Mahalia Jackson Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to go play pool somewhere. So the promoter decided to rent AC's Pool Hall near Magazine
Street. That was another one.
Yep.
That had a great roast beef poor boy.
Exactly. And that's where I had my first roast beef poor boy, and then I had another one.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to have another one, but they wouldn't let me.
Oh, really?
Yes, suckers.
I've got a pretty good anecdote about them. AC's Pool Hall. We used to go there all the time. In case you're wondering, it was on that I can never remember. It's two names. It's the spot where the ingoing traffic, traffic coming from uptown and going into the French Quarter and the CBD, it kind of forks over to the left, and it's a one-way. And then from that moment on, it's Camp Street all the way in, and then it's Magazine Street a little bit coming back out again. And anyway, I went in there, and I noticed something interesting. And they called it AC's Pool Hall because it was indeed a pool hall. They had pool tables all over the place. And the tables where they served you the roast beef poor boys and all the other things they had was covered with one of those red-checked tablecloths that you used to see everywhere back in those days, you know, the red and white. And they would put this on the table. You'd go over there. You picked up your poor boy, if I remember right. I don't know if they served you or not. I can't remember. Anybody remember that datum? Anyway, so I sat down and I ate it. And you know what happens if you're eating a roast beef poor boy? The gravy and the little bits of this and that fall on the table and makes a mess of one degree or another, especially if you're one of those people who insists that you get a really sloppy roast beef, using those exact words, interestingly. So, anyway, if it was AC's, you would eat your poor boy. You'd make the big mess on the tablecloth. And then the waitress would come over, and she would pick up the tablecloth, and she would grab it with two hands, and she would give it a whop. No, that was not an ethnic slur, by the way. That's what it sounded like, whop. And she would put it on, back on the same table, but upside down from where it had been before. And then somebody else would come and sit down at that same table, get the roast beef poor boy, make the mess, get up and leave. Waitress comes over, grabs the tablecloth, and once again, whop, it turns over, puts it back on the same table. I mean, I keep wondering, what is it about, you know, doing that, giving that whip to it, makes it clean? You know, this is how you clean a tablecloth. I wish it were true. In fact, I wish that tablecloths were found in restaurants anymore, which they hardly are. Even in the expensive places, nobody's using tablecloths anymore. Boo, boo, boo. Calling over here, Ron, the gourmet waiter. Hello there.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Nice to be back after 2, 3, 4 days, depending on how you count them, because when I'm not here, I feel funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I read about your trips online. I go to nomenu.com, and I read about your voyages.
Yeah, well, voyages, huh? If you want voyages, if that's what you're wanting, the person to talk to is not me, but my wife, who is a voyager, if ever there was one. Travels the world.
When is the last time you've been on the Crescent? What is that? That's that train.
The Crescent from here to New York.
City of New Orleans?
City of New Orleans, yeah, that's it. Formerly known as the Panama Limited a long time ago.
You were talking about roast beef. I've got a restaurant if you'd like to try what I think is a phenomenal roast beef po' boy.
Oh, I'd love to get it. I'm crazy about roast beef po' boys even to this day.
Okay, Nola Po' Boys, 908 Bourbon.
908 Bourbon. So this would be around Governor Nichols, I think, right around there.
Yes, this was the old Mary's Hardware building.
Oh, yeah, I know where you're talking about. Yeah,
Mary's has moved to Rampart.
Uh huh.
But when they were at 908 Bourbon, this was their location. Now I will say there are two dining rooms in the back.
Yeah.
If you look in from Bourbon Street, it will often look crowded, but they do have quite a bit of room in the back two dining rooms.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's good to know. When are they open?
Nola Po' Boys is open every day.
Every day?
And on weekends, weekends they're open until 3 in the morning. So it's
do they
not
have
a bad
lunch,
place
too?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's basically po' boys.
Yeah.
Another thing I would segue into this, but it's a completely different topic. There are turkeys that are frozen at the Walmart over there on Chapultepec, and I just bought one, and I've got it on the smoker.
Yeah.
But I brined it.
Oh, well, you're doing it exactly the way I do it, then, for what that's worth.
anyway. They're 99 cents a pound. It's a pretty good deal.
Oh, is that a deal? Yeah, that's, you know, turkey is always a pretty good deal. Year round, really. You know, it goes up a little bit around the holidays, but the rest of the year, you can always get turkeys, and they're cheap as dirt. And they're good. I don't think we eat turkey nearly enough. I remember a time when it was something that came up in the mix, like every two, 3 months or so, maybe more often. My mother did it that way. My wife's mother did it that way too. I had like over the years, 5 or 6 turkeys at their house. So it's a great idea. Sorry.
Speaking of mothers, we have red beans and rice night at my mother's, typically every Monday.
Yep.
And what we decided to do, since she likes smoked turkey so much, is I'm going to bring a smoked turkey over. We're going to kind of have like a mini Thanksgiving meal instead of the red beans.
Oh, for a minute there, I thought you were going to put the turkey in the red beans, which is something I've never seen before, but it doesn't have the ring of being a total disaster, does it? I mean,
no. When I make my red beans, and we usually eat hers are very good, I put smoked ham hocks in my beans.
Well, that's wonderful.
It does lay down a little layer of smoke flavor. Some people like it. I happen to be very partial to it.
Yeah, that's something that comes and goes. It has historically been the province of restaurants in Metairie in particular. You'll see it almost everywhere you go around there. Even Chef Andrea, he does it every week on Monday. He has the red beans with the the big ham shank, right? Plop, right in the middle of it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have. Just wanted to call in and say hi. Good talking to you.
My pleasure.
I'm going to send you an email later today with a picture of the smoked turkey, and I'll let you know how it comes out.
Okay. That's a deal.
Awesome. Okay, thanks, Tom.
Thanks for calling. See ya. It's The Food Show. Ron the Gourmet Waiter has also served on a number of occasions as our guest host when I'm away on vacation or something. If you've got anything on your mind about eating, about a restaurant you've been to or one you're thinking of going to that you haven't been to yet, call me and ask me, and I'll give you my opinion on it. And if my opinion is off the beam, it is likely that a lot of other people will call in and say, no, you're nuts, either liking or hating that restaurant. And that way you get some good information that you can use yourself. We also have as a background topic, if you could even call it that. It's pretty simple and a little bit abstruse. Here's the question. In a lot of the great New Orleans dishes, you can define the flavors that they carry that make them so popular. If you figure out that there are three ingredients that make the difference, and the best examples that I thought of right away, roast beef po' boys, where you have the great things are the bread, the gravy, and the pickles. Without that, you don't have a true roast beef po' boy flavor. And those three, and a lot of all of them, in my opinion. Another one is barbecue shrimp, where you have shrimp, you have butter, you have pepper, and that's about it. And is it great? And there are other dishes like this, so I was wondering if you have thought of any. If you have, call us and share them with us. It's just a little game we're playing. And if you have something a little more serious than that, like which Revion dinner do you think is the best, Tom? I don't know, because there's no way in the world I could get to all the Revion dinners every year, although I do go to quite a few of them, and I've been going to a lot of them since they opened up shop about 25 years ago. That's been there a long time, huh? Anyway, the Revion dinners are underway. They will go from now until the end of the month. I warn you, if you make a reservation or try to make a reservation, you will be told at some restaurants, like the restaurant I did today about Antoine's, I'm featuring one a day in my newsletter. Nomenu.com is where you find this. And I found that some days, over at Antoine's, there are a lot of days of the week where they can't take a reservation from you. Not because they don't want to, but because they have these immense private parties that have been going to Antoine's around Christmas time for decades, if not a century or more. And I'm not exaggerating at all. It's really true. I've gotten caught in it once in a while. If you go to Antoine's and you see what is obviously a group and there's a lot of people in it, pick another restaurant, come back on a different day, because that restaurant will ultimately take over the place, and which is fine. I mean, you know, that's a long-standing tradition, especially Mardi Gras crews, and also attorneys and other big offices, operations. And, you know, they all have their party at Antoine's at Christmas time, and everybody loves it, especially Antoine's. The Food Show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice, 260-6368.
And many of our listeners are asking themselves right
are
now.
They?
I know this.
You do?
I do know this. Yes, this is true.
What do you know?
What can I celebrate today?
I'm going to take a guess. And I'm cheating because I've got the same piece of paper you've got in my hand here.
Okay.
Okay, I'll let you go ahead and do it.
No, you start.
Okay. I think it's National Lager Day.
Now, why would that be?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you something about lager.
Tell me.
It is the number three beverage in the world. And that's behind...
That I believe.
Behind water and tea.
Yeah.
Water, tea, and lager
water,
beer.
Water is the favorite drink of
big,
all.
Big number one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then beer is second or tea?
Tea is
tea
second.
Tea is second, and then beer?
Lager.
Specifically lager
is number three. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, there are other things we can celebrate today.
Oh?
It's the National Human Rights Day today.
I'm all for that.
A National Nobel Prize Day today.
Oh.
And for those of you...
Have you heard anything about...
For those of you who actually read, it is
I'm going to send an email to find out if... Yeah. Well, no.
If you are a person who actually reads, you probably know that it's National Dewey Decimal System today.
Oh, gosh. Do you know there's a street in the New Orleans area that is named for that guy?
Mr. Decimal?
Yeah. No, not Mr. Decimal. You had me there for a minute. It's just across is Causeway Boulevard, just lakeside of Lakeside Mall. Melville Dewey, that was his name, I think. Do we have any corrections out there? Doug has retreated from the conversation, apparently. 260-6368, we're going to look it up, I guess. Today is National Lager Day. Lager beer, you know, is beer that has been sort of aged long enough to get a little sharpness and lightness also. It's the trend for light beer originally began as a search for lagers as opposed to bigger flavored beers than that. But here's my favorite fun fact about lager beer. A long time ago, although there are many vestiges of it still left around town, old signs and things like that, there was a brewery. It was where the Royal Sonesta Hotel is now, in the middle of the French Quarter, of all places. It was a big brewery, and their mainstay brew was a beer called Regal beer, and it showed this swashbuckling, looks like a French semi-warrior type of guy on the label. Very much looks like he probably might be rich. In fact, it's just one of those things that makes an impression on you. Anyway, the reason that Regal beer was called Regal beer, we think it could have been a coincidence. You never know. Is that Regal is lager spelled backwards. I bet you didn't know that, unless you heard it from me. I've been saying it for years. I have an old bar sign that hangs over my desk at home, and it's got to be from the 50s at the very latest. I think it might be older than that. And it used to hang behind a bar somewhere. I don't know exactly where. I bought it at the flea market in the French Quarter a long time ago, too. Anyway, I still have that thing. I like it.
You were talking earlier about the Melville Dewey Drive.
Melville Dewey, that's what.
Melville Dewey Drive. Now, Melville Dewey Drive, the reason it's named that way is because that is where there was a fire station, and right by the fire station was the headquarters for the Jefferson Parish Library System.
Is that true?
Yes.
Well, I thought so. Okay, but they have glad you confirmed that, because I wasn't sure, actually.
They have since moved across I-10, so the big, new, wonderful building.
That always happens, isn't it? Doesn't it? It's The Food Show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice. Our program today is sponsored by Felix, F-E-L-I-X. If you were to use that word in Italian or probably in Spanish, definitely in Latin, it means happy. That's all. Felix. There used to be a comic strip and a cartoon on TV, too, called Felix the Cat, Happy Cat. Most cats are pretty happy. Anyway, Felix, that's the other alternate pronunciation of it, has been around since the 1930s. And as far as I'm concerned, the greatest moment in their history is the day that I walked in there after I was being goaded by some friends of mine who thought I was a sissy for never having eaten raw oysters. And I thought that was a choice that was open to me, but I had to do it then. I ate a half a dozen oysters at Felix's, and I got to say that I had to kind of like hold back the flavors with crackers and ketchup and all the other junk that that oysters are often served with. But then only a few days later, and I don't have any explanation for this, I was swept over by a desire to eat more raw oysters, and I've been eating more of them ever since. I'm crazy about oysters. If you go to Felix's, you will find not only do they have oysters on the half shell, but they also bake oysters with Oysters Rockefeller, Oysters Bienville, and then they have char-broiled oysters and a whole bunch of other ones, and a full menu of seafood. It's there all the time in two locations. One of them is where it's always been, in the French Quarter on Iberville Street between Royal and Bourbon. And the newer one is out there in Lakeview, beyond Lakeview even. It's right next to the marina, right off the basin, the new Basin Canal, where all the sailboats come and go. Great view, and of course, a lot of seafood there, and that's where the new location of Felix is. And I wish that you would go and enjoy it. I think you will. Felix, since the 1960s, excuse me. No, it's not even that. 1930s. Let me get this right yet. Yeah, that's for sure. That's right. The Food Show. This is Tom Fitzmaurice. Hey, call us, would you? We have this phone and we never use it. Why don't you call us and give it a little use, wear it out a little bit. 260-6368. I'm still looking for anybody who can think of a dish that becomes what it is through having three ingredients that pretty much take over the whole dish. But without those three ingredients, you wouldn't have the dish. It wouldn't it wouldn't just be a matter of needing substance. It's the flavors. And someone brought up an kind of an unusual usage of this, and I've been thinking about it, and I'm not sure I have three. I think I only have two, but red beans and rice. What that is, you might say red beans and rice. So it must be red beans, rice, and something else, right, Tom? No, I mean rice. What does rice add to a plate of red beans anyway? It just kind of thickens it a little bit, lightens it up a little bit. It certainly adds something, but it's something you could live without because it doesn't really, most of the time, have very much taste. The rice that's in red beans and rice, it's usually not there. It's just, you know, it's there for textural reasons. And then, of course, the third ingredient would be sausage. Because if you're making red beans and you don't have some kind of smoked, cured meat in there, I guess you certainly could. I mean, fried chicken, for example. Fried chicken and red beans is a combination made in heaven. But for me, the ultimate is red beans, hot sausage. Mmm. And the third thing, I don't know. You tell me. I've told this story more than a few times before. Very, very early on in the history of our broadcast, back in the 1985, 6, 7, right around there somewhere, a guy called me up and said, how much celery do you put in your pot of red beans? And I said, one stick. He said, next time you do it, try it with more, like three. I said, what? that would be a problem, wouldn't it? And he said, no, you, not only will you not notice that it's got three times as much celery in it, chopped up, you know, but you will say there's something really great about this pot of beans that is unusually, unusually good. And I tried it, and sure enough. Anyway, he, guy, I don't know who he is. I don't know what his name is. But he sent me an email the other day and told me that he was the guy who told me that. And I thanked him again for that. So that maybe that could be the third ingredient. But you don't really notice the taste of celery when you do that. It just adds something. You just can't put your finger on what it is that it adds. But it definitely does. That was a good steer from that guy.
Probably it's, celery. Huh?
Celery?
That's probably what it adds.
Yeah, that's about it. Let's see. Deft dining rule number 459 today. If you go to the trouble of making homemade eggnog, do you make eggnog? Doug, do you make eggnog? Do you like eggnog?
No, I buy eggnog.
You buy eggnog. You go to the store and you get the container and
that's
you just
right.
pour it into a glass.
There you go.
I hate to say it, but so do I. But usually, you know, if there was anybody else at my house that liked it, but neither of the Marys like eggnog for some reason. So it's just me there, and I'm not going to make something like that for me. It's too selfish. But I'll tell you, it's got to be my way. So anyway, if you go to the trouble of making homemade eggnog, you may as well grate your own nutmeg. What? What? Would someone send that over to the rational department of our radio station? Let's see, what else do we have before we get to the news? Oh, here's something from the Gourmet Gazetteer column. A gazetteer is a book that, it's like an encyclopedia or a dictionary, but all it has in it are place names. So cities, oceans, mountains, you know, things like that. Everything that is just part of the scenery that has a name, that is a something that would maybe someday go into a gazetteer. But anyway, the gazetteer has found for us Baker 32531. Where is it, though? It's near Pensacola, Florida, about 48 miles northeast of Pensacola, Florida. Baker. It's the western extreme of that state's panhandle, established as a town in 1907 along a trail that since pre-Columbian days was used by people living there to migrate as necessary. A general store opened there in 1908. It's still there. That's interesting. And it's the Baker Block Museum. It's full of artifacts from the area. Raising cattle has long been a business there. 7,200 people live there now. The place to eat there is the Gator. Well, that figures. Let's see. Gregory is joining us over here on the blue phone. Gregory, welcome. Come on in.
Oh, Tom, ho-ho. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Welcome.
I just looked at the old clock on the wall. I'm going to call you back. Is that all right? Because I know you're going to come up again.
We got 2 minutes. That's an eternity in radio.
That's true. Okay.
Let's start and see how it goes. Okay, go.
Okay. I missed you over the weekend and Thursday and Friday. I know you had to.
You missed Jude?
I missed you, and I wish I could have seen Jude while he was in town, but I know he's always back.
He's not in town anyway.
No, I know that. The last time I saw Jude was at, believe it or not, golly, Andrea's restaurant. Must have been 20
that
years
could
ago.
Be.
He was a toddler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, ain't that now. He has two toddlers of his own.
I know. I know. I wanted to ask you, you said not to ask you what's your favorite Revillon menu, but I always think the Pelican Club is elegant.
Oh,
and I also like.
You know what? They're in a class by themselves when it gets to Revillon. And I'll tell you what it is. It's very easy to say. Whatever everybody else is doing with the Revillon or the in the summertime, you know, the summertime equivalent of it, they do it longer with a bigger selection and at least as good and usually better ingredients. And it's just a whole two or three steps higher than anybody else's. Even the best of them, I would put them up against.
I couldn't agree with you more. And he also does that during the culinary. He extends it longer, and his selections are always more.
Yes.
You know,
like eight different choices.
And only second to him, I would say, would be Frank Bryson down there in Riverbend. I mean, he puts on a fantastic spread, too.
All you have to do is get a table, which ain't the easiest thing in the world, because that's a little restaurant. But, boy, does he knock it out. Does he really does.
He sure does. Yesterday was his birthday. You know, him and Marna, his wife, had the same day.
Same exact day. They were born the same day. Yeah.
Same day, same year. All right, Ben. Well,
thank you.
I'll up on you tomorrow.
Whenever. All right. See ya.
All right.
It's news time, I think. We'll be back. We have more of the food show coming. Stay tuned.